Hey everybody, welcome to Stoppage Time. I'm Jimmy Vance. I'm with Jason Longshore and Mike Conti on the Atlanta United radio broadcast team. And we got a bunch of discussions to talk about today. We got Atlanta United about the 2-2 draw of New York City FC. We got LA Galaxy with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And we've got Atlanta United 2 back in action. So CONCACAF, got a lot to talk about today. And make sure you like this page and share it with your friends and family. We want to get this going. And please send in your questions. We're going to get it, and we'll be answering those throughout the show. So please submit, and also comments if you have any comments about what happened this past Sunday. So guys, I did a Twitter poll on @ATLSoccer929 and wanted to see what people wanted to talk about. I had three options, and then what one was the showpiece match for MLS about LA United and New York City FC, which I know that Jason on Dukes and Bell, on Rick and John, and on Soccer Down Here, you've guys been talking about how high level of a match this was for MLS, a showcase to the world. And I know, Conti, you wrote a great article, the Five Stripe Thoughts, about that too, about how high level of a match this was. And you saw it after the game with Tata and Patrick Vieira. They like hugged it out. Blows, everybody took their shots, and then might be what Conti was saying, maybe an Eastern Conference final preview there.
It could be. I mean, let's see what Toronto has to say about that when they get able to focus on the Eastern Conference and on MLS. And we'll talk about Toronto in a little bit. That was an interesting one last night for them. But this was the best played match in MLS this season between the two best teams, which is high level. I think that's why you saw that reaction from Tata Martino and from Patrick Vieira at the end. If you love the game, you love a match like that. And it was intense. It wasn't mean-spirited. It didn't get nasty at any point. Got a little chippy, as a good match does. I think everyone on the field enjoyed playing in that match. Now, when the stakes are higher, when you get into a playoff situation later in the season, then it's a different conversation. But these two teams, I think, have set the benchmark for MLS right now.
What'd you think, Katya, of that match?
Great for MLS, because you were able to get it on national TV. Very wise choice by Fox prior to the season to identify that match. It had everything. Great crowd, great atmosphere, probably as loud as the Benz has been all year.
Yeah,
we could
loud.
Really feel it in the booth. I hope it came over in our call. I know Jason and I probably had a lot of energy, maybe a little too much at times on my part. I'll work on that.
Always want the energy.
Well, that's good. But, there were moments where, it did get a little chippy, but I thought Alan Chapman had great control of the match. All of the big calls in the match were correct. I think that's a huge, huge factor in this discussion as well, if we're going to talk about this being the best match that Atlanta United has played in this year. That's a big part of it. The ref did not become the show. I thought Atlanta United had some really good stretches of defending again, even though they did concede two goals. I think for stretches, LGP had a really good stretch defending. Parkhurst did give up a penalty, but I thought for the most part he was solid. McCann obviously scored a goal. That's a big headline for me. I love the fact that Atlanta United still did what they do. They played attacking soccer. They did not sit back. They did not let the opponent change the way they play. Great match, great for MLS, and I have to give Jason a ton of credit, because what he said on Soccer Down Here Monday is 100% right. You could have dropped that match into Spain or into Italy or into Germany, and it would have looked like it would have fit with that kind of quality that we saw on Sunday.
Yeah, it's just like how it went back and forth, momentum shifts,
And just at a high level.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is, it was a dramatic match. And there's different things here. I mean, it can be a dramatic match, but a poorly played match.
Right.
This one was a dramatic match, and it was played at a very high level. You had two teams that came in with completely different tactical mindsets. NYCFC in a 4-2-3-1, Atlanta United in a 3-5-2. Neither one really truly deviated from it. Atlanta United at the end took all the momentum. NYC had the momentum really on either side of the halftime whistle. They really controlled it. But the end was all Atlanta United. Match had its ebbs and flows. Both teams were able to put their imprint on it, because these are two really good teams.
And I thought it was cool seeing the Twitter reaction of the neutral observers, soccer writers, soccer television personalities, but also just some neutral fans talking about, wow, what a heavyweight fight that was between Atlanta United and New York City. You hope you get to see that again. We're going to see them again in early June at Yankee Stadium, June 9th. But I think it'll be different because, credit to New York City, they've got a great following up there. Yankee Stadium will not be sold out for that game. I mean, we just know that.
Yeah.
I think the atmosphere in the Benz contributed to just everything coming together, that perfect storm. And I thought it was interesting that Patrick Vieira said that's the best atmosphere in the league right now.
Yeah.
And Patrick Vieira is someone who's been a manager over in Europe. He's been with the elite development squad with Manchester City, so I'm sure he has seen the best atmospheres in Europe. And for him to say that about the atmosphere Sunday night, I think it's a real credit to the 17s and the supporter section, everyone there who had a ticket. Like we said on the full-time report, you know, Atlanta United and New York City probably both felt very good getting a draw out of that. The big winners, in my opinion, were the fans who were there. Mm-hmm. Because you were treated to 90 minutes of excellent soccer.
It's just high quality. And, you know, and props to the New York City FC. They brought a good contingent of fans there.
They were great.
Had
they
a solid great. Away section that you...
And respectful, too. You know, this wasn't like Orlando coming in and clashing and things like that. I think everything was really respectful.
But it was just something, just the showpiece of what MLS... This is at its highest quality
this
of
where it's going.
Where this league is going, exactly.
Yeah, this is where it's going. And when people start with this whole nonsense about... You know, oh, I only watch European soccer and this and that. Sit down and watch that match. If you love the game, you're going to enjoy that match. Right. If you come out and you say, well, MLS isn't that good, then you're biased. I mean, you're just not being fair to it. This is a league that's going places. And when you have teams like this that have a lot of depth, that have a very true identity to who they are, and that's something that more teams need to develop in this league. But NYC knows how they want to play. Atlanta knows how they want to play. They both stuck to it, and it was just done at such a high level. This is what we need to see more of.
Mm-hmm.
These two teams have set the bar. Toronto's right there. After what they did last year, they are absolutely right there. You see Orlando trying to get there this year. You see other teams, New York Red Bulls, are getting there, but they haven't gotten over the hump yet. Kansas City has an identity. More of that, and we want to see more matches like this on a regular basis.
Yeah, and like I said, they had everything. The match was incredible, and then the atmosphere, like we were saying with the supporter groups, it was just loud. I mean, I saw it on Atlanta United Fan TV. The guys were saying, hey, I had friends in New York that were watching on TV, and they're like, this is mental. You know, this is crazy. You know, the sound that the Benz generates from some of the 17s.
Oh, I was watching it back Monday, and I just caught it on Fox Sports South, and second half, I mean, it blew me away how loud it was. You know, it just absolutely blew me away.
Sometimes it's a little hard to tell. We're wearing our headphones and we're calling the match. We don't really get a picture of how loud it was. Listening back to it, I think now I realize just how loud it was. It was very loud.
There were a couple times that I had to turn it up a little bit because I couldn't hear you real well. It was so loud.
That's good. That's a good problem.
That's what we
make that continue to be a problem, please, 17s. We would like
your goal.
That. Yeah. Squad goals.
Yeah, and just to kind of finalize, kind of like a recap for us, you know, like, you know, some people are a little mixed. They're like, yeah, it's a point, you know, a solid point. But, you know, but then, you know, your home matches, you want to take home 3 points.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
If you're reaching for something here to be upset about, it's one of those matches. It's highly played. It's at this point in the season where you can shake hands, be happy about it, get out of there and say, all right, we're going to get them next time. That's how you look at it now. Now in October where you're playing for seeding or in a playoff match, a different conversation, but that's MLS. You're building towards a playoff. It's not like other leagues where every game counts the same. MLS doesn't necessarily have that because you have a playoff at the end.
No.
So you're building, you want to peak later. This is a great test. I'm still going to grade it as incomplete. I don't think you get a true judge of what Atlanta United is until Barco's in from the start, until Vishalba's in there, until Escobar's in there, until you have the full complement. But it's a very good performance. You know Atlanta's right there,
right.
And now they have to break through.
I think if we would have told people right after the Houston match that you're going to play NYC in a couple weeks without Vijalba, without Escobar, Barco's still really not a part of it, maybe coming on at the end, and you're going to get a 2-2 draw with them, I think everyone would have been ecstatic.
Yep.
Tata was ecstatic after the match. He knows it was a high-quality point. And I think this discussion would have probably been a little bit different because Jason's right, and you're right, Jimmy. We heard that after the match, we heard it again on Monday, that was a draw that felt like a loss. Well, first of all, it's not.
Yeah, I didn't get that feeling.
But for those who were saying that, and, you know, it was a lot of people on the air on the morning show on 92.9. Hi, Bo. here's the thing. If you're down 2-1 and you pull back a goal late to get the draw, it probably feels a little bit different than being up 2-1 going into the 70th minute and losing the lead and drawing. And you did have two different leads in that match. But I want you to consider something about NYC. They had only trailed in, I think, 18% of match time all season prior to Sunday's match. They trailed in almost 30% of match time on Sunday. New York City, you know, people are saying, well, Atlanta only had 45% possession. That's not very good. You realize that is an opponent high against New York City since week one.
Possession doesn't matter. It's such an overblown stat now at this point. It gives you a sense of the match.
Yeah.
It's not good or bad. teams can look good with 30% of the possession.
Right.
Teams can look good with 70% of the possession. It's just, it gives you an idea of how the match played out.
Right. And I'll take the 90% possession that Atlanta United had in the final 10 minutes.
Sure.
When New York City had 12 clearances.
But I'd rather, honestly, I'll take 30%, 40%, like we've seen it sometimes, mm-hmm. and goals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to have possession to create goals. What I like that Atlanta United has started to do this season is they're not having to dominate possession at times. They can still be dangerous going forward.
Yeah, I think a final thought is that, like you said on your article at 99game.com, that, I mean, we're playing without a healthy Barco, Vajalba, Escobar, and we're not even in our preferred, you know, formation, you know, of high press, you know, really kind of our more style. Yeah. But now we're showing that we can win in different ways and we can play in different ways that we can get results.
It's showing this is a roster that is pretty deep. You know, NYC, I think, maybe has the best depth in the league. Toronto's right there, but Atlanta's really close. And I think the more time with ATL UTD too, that guys like Robinson get, a guy like Gallagher, he keeps scoring goals there, you're going to give him a run out with the first team. The more those guys can stay on the cusp, this is going to be a really good squad as the year goes on. And you start to look ahead, schedule gets crowded. U.S. Open Cup coming up in the first week of June, and you have midweek games all around that. So this roster is going to get tested. It's good that it's happening now. It's good you know you can turn to Miles Robinson. It's good you know you can play 3-5-2. You have different ways to win. And mm-hmm. that's been the biggest thing we've learned so far in the first 6 weeks.
And everybody, if you're just joining us at Stoppage Time, I'm Jimmy Vance with Jason Longshore and Mike Conti of the Atlanta United Radio broadcast team. And please send in your Facebook questions. You know, we'll be getting to that soon. And please like this and share this page with everybody. That would be great. Let's quickly talk about a couple of your top performers from the match. You know, of course, you know, Al Marone, mm-hmm. I think, had a really solid match.
Yep.
You know, just, I mean, dribbling away out of trouble. And this, I mean, getting fouls, you know, drawing fouls called on him. And, you know, I think Parker's, other than that, you know, the penalty that, you know, he had to commit.
Yeah.
You know, that happens.
Yeah,
but I think he had a solid McCann, too. Mm-hmm. Who are some other, maybe your...
Nagby. I thought Nagby was excellent. And, again, carrying the ball out of trouble. I thought he was really good on that. Those were the ones that stood out to me. Jeff was solid in his holding midfield role, as usual. I thought Barco was... flashes looked really good, but he just didn't have that first step, and that's something that's going to come with more time and full health. But yeah, Miguel Almiron was really driving this team forward most of the match.
And I need to mention, you gave him props. LGP, he came back in a big way this match.
You know,
some people, you know, some criticism of him, I think, is unwarranted. And, well, I mean, he proved in this match that, I mean, he came up with some big tackles.
Because this is who he is. This match was an example of who LGP is. People want to nitpick the mistake in Houston or mm-hmm. the red card in Minnesota, and yeah, that's part of who he is too. But this is what he's capable of doing. I thought this was his best match of the five that he has played this season. One other name I would throw in, I thought he did a solid job. Might not have been like the headliner, but I thought Kevin Kratz in mm-hmm. the starting role did a solid job.
Did
not make a mistake. Helped move things forward a little bit, responsible with the ball, got back and defended when necessary. I have no problem at all with the job Kevin Kratz did.
Yeah, helped me move things forward a good bit, actually. First half, he was 100% on his passes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was connecting passes all night long. He had a really good sense of what was happening in the moment when McCann scored. He let the ball run off the header from Parkhurst. He knew Almiron was behind him. Little things like that. He doesn't get an assist for it, but that just shows his soccer intelligence.
Put it to you this way. I think it's a much, much longer list of Atlanta United players who played well on Sunday as opposed to those who did not play well.
That's true. Who played poorly. That's the thing.
Yeah, and getting to that with, you know, a small minority after the match, you know, Joseph Martinez. You know, everybody is accustomed that this guy's going to score a hat trick every game.
Do we have a soapbox?
Or he's going to score multiple goals per game. What were you saying?
Do we have a soapbox?
Yeah.
Can I stand on it?
Yeah, so I'm going to give this to you. So, I mean, the guy, you know, with his injury and all, I mean, like you said on, I think it was Dukes and Bell, it was like, he needs to be fed. And, like, Joseph Martinez, like, he just wasn't fed quality goals. He didn't really have a lot of chances to. I don't think he even shot one time. I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
So, like, he didn't have the opportunity, and you can only do so much. Yeah. And then
he had no shots, but
yeah, so
no shots.
And, a couple close calls, yeah. But no shots.
And then people, you know, maybe everybody's like the laziness, and like, I mean, and then that incident at halftime. Why don't you just kind of talk a little bit about it?
Okay, the incident at halftime. I'll recap my conversation with Rick and John and Harry Douglas, and Harry Douglas knows how this stuff goes. You know, as a former athlete, former player. It's one thing when it's coming from the stands and people are yelling at you, booing you, whatever. That's fine. It's not personal. When somebody does it to your face, it's personal. It feels personal. And Joseph getting upset there, you wish he could have, you know, not heard it, walk away, whatever. But I'm cool with the passion there. I don't have a problem with it. I have more of a problem with questioning his work effort. It's not fair to Joseph Martinez. Joseph Martinez is here to score goals, period. That's it. He's not here to do what Miguel Almiron does. He's not here to do what LGP does. He's here to score goals. And he's done that at a record clip in this league. This league didn't just start yesterday. So Joseph Martinez is doing the job he's paid to do. Does he sometimes drift back onside? Yeah, he does. And sometimes it works to his benefit and it works to the team's benefit. Is he offside occasionally? Yeah. Every striker in the world is. That's nothing new here. This is how you play the game. Does he have a bit of a swagger, an attitude on the field? He does. And that's what the best players have, especially forwards in this game. Zlatan, hello. That's all we've been talking about since he signed with this league. Do you think he is always constantly hustling back to be onside like you do at 12 years old?
No.
No, you're not. Does he have a swagger, an attitude on the field? Does he come off as arrogant sometimes? Yeah. And he's one of the best in the world. Joseph is the best striker in this league over the last year and a half. And he has an attitude to show it.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that because he's producing. He's not going to produce every game with 3 goals. It's impossible. He's scoring at a rate that is unheard of. Let's slow the roll on criticizing Joseph Martinez's work rate because we were just celebrating the fact that he's had 4 hat tricks in less than 30 games, and nobody else has done that, even the leading scorers in Major League Soccer history. Let's stop with the nonsense about Joseph Martinez right now, because he is doing the job he's paid to do.
Let me use another Atlanta sports analogy, if I may. You know, Julio Jones, there's no doubt that his touchdowns dropped significantly from 2016 to 2017. How often on 92.9 The Game did you hear our personalities blaming that on Julio? Hardly ever. The Carolina game where he let one or two go through his hands, I think, would be the exception. But for the most part, it's, oh, let's blame Matt Ryan or blame Steve Sarkisian, right? And maybe some of that's not fair, but maybe some of it is fair because Julio can only catch what's being thrown to him, right? Well, it's kind of the same here with Joseph Martinez, right? He can only strike what's being put on his foot or his head, correct? Mm-hmm. He was not getting service on Sunday. Guess what? I want him to want the ball. And if he's unhappy because he's not getting the ball, I'm good with it. So, this is what you get. And Jason's right. Every elite striker in the world is like that, okay? Everyone has a swagger. Everyone wants the ball. The best athletes in any sport want to have the ball to help their team win. It was a very frustrating match for Joseph Martinez. He was called offside 3 times. I mean, that's a lot. He's been offside 10 times on the season now. That's more than anyone else in MLS. But it has nothing to do with him loafing or you know, being lackadaisical and trying to get back onside. It's not that at all. It's just the way he plays. He plays very high.
The offside on the goal, for example, that was called back.
Yeah.
Nothing Joseph Martinez can do about that.
That was unfortunate. Well, it was really unfortunate.
And I made this point with Andy Bunker on Monday night. if Joseph is standing maybe two steps to the left of where he was, we don't even have this discussion. And right. what happened in halftime does not happen.
Right. Right.
And we aren't even mentioning Joseph Martinez in any negative way today.
The other
wrong place at wrong time.
If Julian Gressel had served the ball to Joseph Martinez, mm-hmm. running in his diagonal to the near post, just like he did against Toronto last year where he scored on the cross from Tito Villalba, yep. if that ball had been served and Joseph gets the shot, probably it's a goal, and we're not talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
But he made the run that he's supposed to make. Gressel cut it back. That's how the game goes sometimes. He cuts it back. Martinez is stuck. There's nowhere for him to go, and he bumps with Sean Johnson. He's impeding him. It's offside.
Well, and I want to go back to something I saw on Reddit a couple days ago. And shout out to Reddit, by the
way. They're giving us some good
advice. Shout out to Reddit because I know you're watching. But they were making a reference to Joseph's relationship that he had with the supporters when he was in Syria. Mm-hmm. And we even saw the picture that was posted on Reddit, him doing the "Can you hear me?" to an empty stand. You know, let's not copy that, okay? I mean, that was a very toxic, negative relationship that he had with supporters there. The one thing I have loved watching from afar last year, now being a part of it this year, it's just how supportive this fan base has been of the Five Stripes.
Yes.
And you know, even when I hear things, I know this isn't the majority, but when I hear some people say, man, that was a draw that felt like a loss, man, we're getting spoiled if a well-played draw against New York City is an unacceptable result.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand it's at home. You want to get 3 points at home all the time. But, man, we're getting spoiled now if we're looking at it as an unacceptable result. And I just hope that we can keep channeling the positive energy that we had around this team and its fan base last year. And this doesn't go completely off the rails now where we're going to be nitpicking guys every week. Joseph did not have a great match by his standards on Sunday. I think even he would tell you that, right?
You get the service too.
Yeah. Right. It's not all his fault.
Yeah.
It's not all his fault. But, I mean, Joseph wants to go out and score hat tricks, and he didn't have a shot. I mean, that's a tough match for him. But this isn't going to be a trend. You know, let's calm down. Let's calm down on all of this right now and enjoy the fact you've gotten results in five straight matches. And he has scored 5 goals in those matches, and he leads MLS in goals. Everything's going to be okay with this.
Well, I was about to say that. I put this in perspective. After the Houston match, would you take, after 6 matches, 13 points?
Absolutely. If somebody has a poor match, we're going to say they had a poor match. Leandro Gonzalez Pires in Houston had a poor match. He had made a bad decision in Minnesota. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. Means he had 2 bad matches. Joseph Martinez on Sunday, and this was my frustration with it, didn't even have a bad match. If he's getting chances and not converting them, he's not doing his job. He's having a bad match.
Right.
He didn't get chances. There were at least 3 crosses I can think of that were played to him. I think they were all from Gressel, and they just didn't connect.
Yeah.
One of them was behind him. One of them was too far in front. The one at the very end was very close.
Right.
And again, Joseph Martinez is lazy. Well, he's making a 30-yard sprint to get onto the end of that ball from Gressel that missed by about a foot, and Johnson beat him to it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be realistic here. When somebody has a bad match, mm-hmm. criticize them for having a bad match. Joseph didn't even have a bad match on Sunday because he didn't even get the service to have a bad match. He didn't miss any chances because he didn't get any chances. It happens. It's part of the game.
Yeah.
Frustrating match for Gressel, by the way. I would just put that out there really quickly. I mean, he had a couple turnovers in the middle third that were ill-timed, couple crosses that were wayward, frustrating. And I only say that because he's had like 4 really good matches in a row.
Defensively,
prior to this
he was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think that could have been part of the issue, is he had a lot more to do defensively in this match, and that was a concern for me. He handled that side of the ball. So my thing always is keep a 0 on the board if you can.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing the defensive job first, get it done. And he did. He just didn't add as much going forward as you usually want. Crosses just wasn't quite in sync.
Yeah.
It happens. It's one of those matches. Again, he's not a bad player.
No.
Had a slightly off night.
Right.
It's okay.
Yep. Yeah. And before we get to your Facebook questions, so keep on sending those in, or your comments about the match and about LA Galaxy coming up as well. The Boat Show made his debut. Ezequiel Barco, $15 million man, came out, you know, had about a 20 minutes, I think. Run out. Just initial thoughts. I know, you know, still working it out. You know, Rusty, not the finished product by any means. But, you know, What did you think of his debut?
I mean, it was good. It was a great reaction from the fans. You know, he's not 100%. He didn't have that first step, and that's really the thing that caught me about him is he's so good at creating space for himself with his first step. Didn't really have that, but kept battling. I mean, you know, he earned some fouls, hustling. I liked it out of Ezekiel Barco. I think we haven't seen the best of him yet, and it'll probably take a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. I thought the goal was coming there. He had a run, oh boy, 83rd, 84th minute, where he was kind of, you know, parallel to the top of the 18, just trying to turn on it. But I thought it was remarkable how much respect New York City was showing him, collapsing two defenders on him pretty much every time the ball fell to his feet. So, I mean, the secret obviously is out. There really wasn't much of a secret about Ezekiel Barco. Mm-hmm. But and I know we'll get more into the LA Galaxy match coming up, but this is a very interesting week, I think, for Barco coming up. Do they feel like he's fit enough to be in the 11? Is he going to be a sub again? If he's in the 11, are they counting on him to give them 90? Yeah. Because, I mean, he literally had not been able to run for weeks. Takes a long time. Jason will tell you this as someone who played. It takes a long time to build that fitness back up. And I know we're all really excited about the possibility of a Zlatan v. Barco matchup, and we might get that. But I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk.
Okay. And let's get to your Facebook questions. So keep on sending these in. You know, make sure you like this, share this page with everybody. Let's see, Dion Johnson, what made Justin Martinez go off during halftime while walking back to the locker room? And do you think his hot temper could cause some issues later down the road?
I'm okay with the hot temper, to be honest, because it hasn't caused issues. You know, it hasn't been, you know, a negative. You're not seeing him pick up red cards, kicking at players, anything like that. Reportedly, and this is all, like, I haven't heard the video. I haven't heard sound to it. I haven't heard, you know, an eyewitness account. Reportedly, a fan questioned Joseph Martinez's work rate. And a fan said, come on, play, something like that. And Joseph took exception to it. Like we talked about on the show with Rick and John and Harry Douglas, and, I mean, Harry's been through this as a former athlete and a former Falcon. It's something different when somebody gets in your face and says you're not working hard or calls you soft or what have you. You're going to react to it because that's your professional pride. So, you know, in a perfect world, he doesn't hear it and he walks away. He heard it. He reacted. Okay with that. I wanted to take pride in his work.
Yeah, and I said it on Twitter after the game, and I know Jay Riddle had a good video on it, Atlanta United Fan TV. That, I mean, this is like not a lot of places get this kind of access to the players in that tunnel. What a unique experience that is for the fans, and it just takes one person or like multiple people to try to do that. A team, if that happens more, a team will take that away, and like it won't, you know.
Did you notice who the peacemaker was, by the way?
LGP.
Exactly. Just saying. I mean, you know, for as hot-tempered as LGP is and how he can sometimes be out of control, according to some, yeah. I mean, he prevented that from blowing up into something that would have been really bad. According to the video. Yeah. I was not there, obviously.
He's a great teammate.
Yeah.
He might like to kick people in the other team, but he's
good. you like him when he's on your team,
yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Yes. Let's see, John Mason. Let's see, obviously he is going to be the center of attention. So, what is Zlatan's most dangerous weapon, and who is best equipped to deal with him Saturday?
Best equipped is going to be tough, but best weapon right now is his size. I mean, it's just flat out his size because he's not 90 minutes fit. So, you know, he'll have some moments with the ball at his feet, but he doesn't have that explosiveness. It's the fact that he's 6'5".
Yeah,
it's just
it's interesting a little bit because I feel like McCann, one of the reasons why he was put into the 11 against Vancouver is because of his size, right, being 6'1". Well, McCann's playing on four yellows going into this L.A. match. And
doesn't matter.
You just got to roll the dice. I mean, no, you're not. I mean, I know he's not going to change the way he plays or anything like that, but he will be tested because, and certainly on set pieces at least, and Larenowitz would probably be a part of that too.
Probably.
His size is going to be probably his biggest asset in dealing with someone like Zlatan. But it's going to be a team effort, is it not? I mean, I'm sure LGP is going to be involved in this. Parkhurst is going to have to be as solid as he's always been. I'm not 1,000% sure Zlatan would give a full 90. To be honest with you, I mean, he's
getting close.
He's getting close, but what's he at right now? He's at 127 minutes on the year in three matches, right? So, I mean, yes, maybe he can give you a full 90, but he's been on Jimmy Kimmel this week, and he's doing all the Hollywood stuff, so, I mean, who knows?
Do you remember when he got subbed off for Chicago?
I was trying to remember. I want to say he got to at least the 70th.
Okay. He was subbed off in the 80th minute against Chicago.
Late. So he's getting close.
Yeah.
The fact is, though, it's just because he's 6'5 right now. He scored 2 goals on headers. He's not doing much in the run of play yet. I mean, the Chicago match, he didn't look that special. Because he's not 100%. I mean, he's coming off of a major knee injury at 36. He's going to have flashes with the ball at his feet, but you can't teach size. So, for that reason, I think Chris McCann starts this weekend.
And later in the show, we'll get to a whiteboard about maybe formations and maybe some tactical stuff that, you know, might, you know, our style might change to prevent them, you know, be able to cross the ball easy to them. So, we'll get to that later in the show. John Nelson says the Whiteboard Chronicles.
The Whiteboard Chronicles will be back.
Let's see. Jonathan, JD says, if we are putting between 45 and 70,000 Mercedes-Benz every weekend, why are we struggling to put 8,000 at Cool Ray for Atlanta United 2?
Because it's not downtown.
Yeah, and also they've only had 2 matches, and one was on Easter.
It's not downtown. It was very cold the second match.
Yeah.
You know,
and it was Easter, right? Wasn't it Easter Sunday?
No, it was the next week.
Or it was the next... Oh, Master Sunday, excuse me.
Yeah, Master Sunday.
And the weather was awful.
Yeah. Weather was bad. I mean, it's just... look, it's the second team. You don't draw as much for the JV as you do for the varsity. It's always been that way. It's in Lawrenceville. It's further away. You're limiting the fan base that's going to go. That's okay. Yeah. You know, second teams in this league are generally drawing 1,000, 1,500.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with drawing 5,000 plus and 3,000 plus, or right under 3,000. Yeah. That's pretty good. I think in the summer it's going to pick up. The one that I want to see, and I hope everybody comes out for it, is Tuesday next week. First midweek match against Charleston Battery. You know, kind of a local rival of sorts. Charleston's been around since 1993. Good squad. They have 2 Atlanta United players on loan, and Patrick Okonkwo and Gordon Wilde.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope there's a good turnout for that one. Saturday against Louisville is going to be interesting.
That's
as well.
A huge game, by the way.
Yeah,
right?
Louisville's former defending champs. USL champs.
Yeah. And, I mean, it kind of sets up nicely where you can go watch the second team in person and then get to wherever you need to be to watch the first team at 10:30. There's plenty of time to get to a pub or your radio and check out the match because I think, what, they kick off at 7:30 at Cool Ray on Saturday?
Seven.
Or 7? Yeah, and it's against the defending champs.
So, plenty of time to get to your good old watering hole or at home.
Yes.
Wherever.
Yes.
Or drive somewhere and listen on the radio.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. The watering hole. Yes.
let's see. Went all the way down. Okay. Deion Johnson, do you think Barca will play off the bench this weekend, what do you think the formation will be? We'll get to the formation
in a bit. It just depends on fitness. I mean, it depends on, for me, if he can give you 60 good minutes, I think you'd probably want to start him. If he can't give you that much, you want to have him come off the bench.
Carlos Bocanegra, by the way, told Dukes and Bell yesterday he thought it would take a full month for Barco to get to 100% fitness.
Yeah, you can still start at not quite 100%.
Right.
But... it takes time. It's a quad. I mean, there's only so much you can do to avoid stressing your quad.
What do you think? Is it, if he's, 65, 70 minutes match fit, do you think he starts?
Yeah. Okay. If you can give 60, I'm starting him.
Okay. Let's see. Daniel Monroe, I think he's talking to Jonathan. I can't speak for others, but I will not go to an LA United 2 game. It's a reserve team. I don't care if they win or lose. It's all about getting up and coming guys playing and growing with them. The reason I don't go to watch academy teams, I have season tickets for the first team. That's when dispensable income will go.
So. Well, I don't know, totally get that. But one thing I'll say about the winning and losing part, whistle to whistle, it's very important. You know, in the grand scheme of things, you're not going to sacrifice player development for winning in USL. You're not going to do that. So... you're going to play a guy if you want to see if Andrew Wheeler-Aminu can give you minutes at right back. You're going to play him 90 minutes in USL, and you might give him the full 90, even if he's struggling, because you're thinking big picture. So that part's true. But there's also something to be said for creating a culture of winning and learning how to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the second match against Penn FC was really a good test for these young players, finding a way back against a team that plays very defensive, good size, plays very direct, and you saw guys like Yosef Samuel, Lagos Kunga figure it out, and that's what you want to see here, and that was a draw that kind of felt like a win for this young team in figuring out how to come back in that match. So the other thing too, if you can't make it up there, the games are now on ESPN Plus. It's $4.99. That's what you get your out of market with MLS Live as well. So $4.99 a month. It's a great service. I used it for the first time this past weekend.
Me too.
I really like how the USL matches look on it. It looks like a just it looks HD, the completely, you know, world class type of production here. So if you can't make it, that's completely cool. Keep up with it, because there's so many stories that are going to emerge, like a Miles Robinson, like Mikey Ambrose playing with the second team, like Wheeler Aminu. Today, Andrew Carlton trained with the second team.
Yeah.
And you get to that possibility about player development is, what's better for Andrew Carlton this weekend? To go to L.A., maybe play, maybe not, or to play 90 minutes here and be a leader in that group?
Yeah.
Sometimes 90 minutes with the second team is going to be more important, and it might be this weekend.
Let's see. Dan Monroe, another statement. He says, can't believe people are criticizing Barker after 20 minutes coming off injury. The kid has all the talent and showed it in Argentina.
If you're criticizing Ezequiel Barco after 20 minutes and saying that he's a bust, you need to stop. Don't try to make a hot take name for yourself with that one. Just don't do it. It's a slippery slope, and you're going to get burned when he's healthy. Ezequiel Barco is one of the best teenagers in the world, period. That's why the cost was there. That's why clubs all over the world are keeping up with him. That's why people were telling him, no, wait, a European club's going to come get you. Don't do that. Don't try to be a hot take artist, please.
Let's see. Brian Wall says, I know Garza said earlier that he was going to wait to fix his shoulder, but now that we have a diagnosis of a torn labrum, do you think he will have surgery soon or attempt to play and have surgery after the season ends?
And just for background on this, Doug Robertson, who I guess is at training today, had Garza tell him that he is playing with a torn labrum. So that's the background, all that. I don't think that's a new revelation, by the way, to my understanding.
I don't think we knew it was a torn labrum. We knew he had shoulder problems.
That he was holding off surgery on dealing with. I don't want to make an assumption on where we go from there.
I mean, you can play with it because he's been playing with it. It's just managing pain. It's not like, you know, an NFL player, an NBA player, a baseball player, obviously, who can't play with it. It's just how much can you deal with it. You know, if it's torn, I'm assuming it's not going to get any worse. Yeah. It is what it is.
You know, I had some member berries for lunch today. remember when Minnesota was accusing Garza of faking a shoulder injury a couple weeks ago?
And wouldn't let him back on the pitch?
Remember the referee wouldn't let him back in because, oh, no, I'm going to go to their technical area and talk to their manager. Remember that? I mean, I don't want to disrespect the Loons or anything, Francisco Calvo.
Don't do that, Francisco
Calvo. But,
respect Calvo.
I think that's I remember that now.
Come on, Francisco.
Let's see. We'll get to one more, and then keep on sending your Facebook questions. And also, I want to know your score predictions for this weekend. You know, what do you think we got? Do you think we're going to draw? Do you think we're going to win? So I want to hear your predictions on those score predictions. And we'll get to one more here. Let's see. Josh says, who do you think doesn't make the trip to L.A.? Those probably be playing Lane United too, like we were mentioning Carlton.
I think Carlton's probably the one. The fact that he's training with the second team. Hey, look, from just a logistical standpoint, he can get two games with the second team, train with them, get back-to-back 90 minutes or, you know, 90 and 70, 90, 60, whatever, and see what he looks like in those types of moments.
I also think the fact that Wheeler Aminu and Miles Robinson were both in the 18 this past Sunday. In fact, they had three defensive subs, right. Zizo as well. If you were to go with a 4-2-3-1, and Jason will get into this on the whiteboard, but I would imagine if you do that, that might promote the opportunity for Robinson and Wheeler to both go to L.A. Yeah. With
I would think they'll go on the trip. Yeah. I think the 18 will be pretty similar. Tito would be the question.
Yeah.
And well, Tito will go anyway. It's just whether or not he's in a kit that I guess
Right. Tito did train today on the side, so that's somewhat promising.
Yeah, and Tata said, you know, I think it was last week, if it was like a must win match or something, he could have played. So.
And one more thing, Atlanta United will be training in LA at the StubHub Center on Friday. So they're going to train in Marietta on Thursday, get on the plane, go out there, train Friday. So when you ask, you know, who's going to go to LA, do keep that in mind, that it's not necessarily who's just in the 18 because they will be training out there.
All right.
Yeah, generally they'll take 19. This one, with it being a longer one and an extra day of training, maybe you take 20.
Yep.
Let's get to the second half of the show here. Quickly, I want to get to a couple things. CONCACAF Champions League yesterday, and Toronto losing to Chivas at home 2-1, like two away goals.
Hey, Chivas played really well. I mean, flat out. Matias Almeida had the right game plan. He executed it perfectly. And we'd speculated about it on soccer down here. You know, you're in that situation. You're going to play defensive more than likely. Why not go for it the first 15 minutes? See what you can make happen. If you get something, cool, it makes the job easier. If you don't, then you're going to play defensive anyway.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to play defense for 60, 75 minutes as opposed to 90. And in the first leg, you don't have to completely bunker it. You get an early goal like they did in the second minute, that opens the whole game up, and you can just play. And that's what Chivas did. They dominated stretches of it. They played a man-to-man aggressive style. Toronto found some ways through it in the first half, equalized. Great goal from Osorio. Great work from Josie Altidor. Give up a goal on a fluke in the second half. I mean, you know, Polito said after the match, he's trying to play that to the near post. The wind carries it to the back post and into the goal. Bono's got to do better, but it's a fluke. And now Toronto has to go score two goals on the road against the team who's had the best defense in CONCACAF Champions League.
No.
It's not going to be easy. It's doable. The good thing is, hopefully, the stomach bug that hit a bunch of players from Toronto coming back from Mexico last week, Josie Altidor, and if you haven't seen the video, don't go look for it. But Josie Altidor was struggling in this match in the second half. I think a lot of Toronto players were struggling late in the match, and I think that stomach bug had something to do with it.
Yeah.
It's one small thing to add to that. In late October, early November, when Toronto was in a knockout game, because they basically did not care about MLS to concentrate on CONCACAF, it will be funny to it'll be interesting to revisit this discussion, because I think they're digging themselves too deep a hole right now to get a top two seed in the East.
I would agree.
They're going to be in the postseason. There's no doubt about it. They're too good not to be.
Right.
But they might be putting all their focus on this at the expense of maybe getting dragged in to a knockout game in the postseason. And it might be fun to have that discussion a couple months from now.
They're doing the right thing, though.
Yeah.
When you have a chance to win CONCACAF Champions League, you do it, you go for it, you deal with the rest later when it comes. The difference between what Atlanta United's doing and Toronto doesn't use their USL team as effectively. And I think Atlanta has created more depth and have players who can step up in those U.S. Open Cup matches. That's another opportunity to rest guys. You can bring up an A.J. Cochran and Jack Metcalf like we talked about last week. USL guys can come up on a loan for Open Cup. They can't come up for a regular season game, but you can use the Open Cup to give those guys minutes alongside a Kunga, a Gallagher, first team guys who've gotten great minutes. I don't think Toronto uses their USL team as effectively. So when Atlanta's in this situation, and hopefully it's next year, they'll be able to dig deeper into the roster and get more out of it. And I don't think they'll have as many issues in league play when they're battling on two fronts.
Very true. And quickly, like we were talking earlier, Atlanta United 2 back in action this Saturday versus Louisville City FC, the defending champs. So that's going to be cool. And like you're talking about, Andrew Carlton might be making his debut in Atlanta United 2. That's going to be really great to see him get some minutes and for some fans to see him play.
Yeah, if you get a chance to go Saturday night, Colray Field, 7 o'clock, you might see a lineup of Yosef Samuel up top, John Gallagher, Andrew Carlton, Lagos Kunga across the attacking mid,
Chris Goslin,
Ollie Shannon in the holding mid, the next generation of Atlanta United.
Yeah.
So if you get a chance, highly recommend it. If you don't, sign up for ESPN Plus, listen to my buddy John Nelson, and this guy
making my debut.
All right. So,
might see some fireworks go off on that one. So. But,
I'll leave you a hat.
Yeah. I'm going to keep the tradition up.
Yeah.
Now let's get into it, guys. LA United, LA Galaxy preview here. A lot of storylines going here. I mean, we got Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you know.
Zlatan.
And then a lot of different things, because Carlos Bocanegra spoke to Dukes and Bell yesterday, and he was kind of hinting on maybe a different style, you know, maybe attacking them more. He didn't say it, but I mean, kind of hinting at the more high press, you know, 4-2-3-1 that we became accustomed to last year. Initial thoughts, like what do you see out of this matchup for us?
Tata Martino's been hitting at it in every press conference after matches here these last few weeks, is you can't press the same way out of the 4-2-3-1. You just can't. It's just a different shape. You're more narrow up front. You can't press that way. And against NYC, we saw that be an issue at times. You couldn't put as much pressure on them in the back as you wanted to. The 4-2-3-1, you're wider at the front. You can press in a different way, and you can really cause the opposition problems. Atlanta United's made their name on pressing. So I think when he gets Barco healthy, Villalba healthy, or at least a reasonable facsimile, he can go with a 4-2-3-1. I think he has the pieces to go 4-2-3-1 either way this week, whether Tito plays or not, mm-hmm. whether Barco plays or not. I think he has the pieces to do it.
You know, the interesting thing about LA Galaxy, when I prepare for a match, I look at where do these teams rank in statistical categories across the league. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that LA Galaxy really hasn't done anything particularly well this year in their six matches. They're 3-2-1. They are second in the West, by the way, kind of quietly. They've snuck into second on the Western Conference table, and they've been a different side since Lawton got there. So I'm acknowledging all of that. But, you know, they're 13th in the league in goals. They're 11th in the league in assists. They're 9th in the league in goal difference, and it's not bad, but that's not great either. I mean, it's average. 14th in shots. I don't know where they rank in possession, if we even care about that.
About the same.
No. You know, they don't really have, a guy like a true goal scoring shut this guy down guy other than Zlatan. Like, for example, Jonathan Dos Santos only has one goal on the year.
Kamara is a guy you got to worry about.
Yeah, but I mean, even him, I mean, I'm looking at what they've done to this point right now. You know, they've got good players, and pardon me for looking down here, but Kamara only has one goal himself in five matches. So what I'm trying to get at is they're good. Zlatan still has a lot left in the tank, as we have seen. It's a tough road match because of the amount of travel you have to do. Mm-hmm. But, man, I don't look at this and say this is any more daunting than playing LAFC or playing even Vancouver. Yeah, it's a different kind of challenge.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about an elite-on-elite matchup like we had on Sunday against NYC.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, seeing them how they've played at home so far this year, you know, they had that, you know, epic comeback versus LAFC, but hey, they were down 3-0, you know, in that match. They lost to...
You got the emotional boost from Zlatan.
Yeah,
that's what they've been around.
They lost to Sporting Kansas City 2-0 at home. So this is a team that can, you know, has given up goals, you know, and their home form hasn't been as good. But, you know, but then I think the challenge for us going from last year is our away form and proving that, you know, just like at home, we can attack and we can play well.
The away form last year was pretty good. I mean, that's the thing.
I'm saying like getting a little bit more win, like a little more, a couple more wins.
Yeah, but I mean, it was one of the best in the league last year. So I mean, it's a fact. It's hard to go on the road in this league and win. It just is. And LA last year was one of the worst teams at home. They were the crazy situation where they were better on the road than they were at home. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
But Atlanta United on the road, they might play a little safer. They might settle for a point a little easier, but that's the nature of the game. I don't think it's anything about this club in particular.
Yeah, and I don't think this is going to be a road match that necessarily feels as much like a road match because, again, you're getting there Thursday night. I think it's huge to have a day there just to train, get acclimated to the time zone. It's my understanding there are going to be a lot of Atlanta United supporters there. I mean, maybe not quite as much as what we saw in Houston.
I've heard about 50.
Yeah, and it might even be more than that. I know there's a pre match watch party or something like that. I forget
Jay,
the location.
Yeah, Jay
I think Jay had. Is Jay coming to LA?
He is not.
Oh, geez.
He is not.
But Jay on Muscle Beach in Santa Monica. That would be a sight to see.
He has the info, though, if anybody wants to direct message.
But my point is, you know, kind of laid back fans out there. You know, Zlatan has a lot of people energized. But this is going to feel different than I think even being out in Houston. Just because you train there on Friday. You've had time to acclimate. You don't have to worry about rushing back on Sunday to worry about a midweek match. I think they're flying back Sunday afternoon. It's going to be a tough match. But, yeah, Atlanta United, put that Houston match aside. We saw what they did on the road at Minnesota in awful conditions. Conditions won't be a problem at all. It's going to be in the upper 70s and clear on Saturday night. I think they'll be fine. And LA Galaxy, they played three matches at home, and they've won two of them. And one of them, they had to come back from three goals down.
Yeah.
I mean, their home form has not been that great.
Let's see, just quickly, Zlatan, how do you think we will, like, we discussed it on the Facebook questions, but how do you think we will... We'll set up for that. We can almost transition to the whiteboard if you want to. How you think we might set up and maybe a projected lineup for everybody.
I mean, the thing about Zlatan is he's just deny service. I mean, it's just that at this point. You just want to cut off service to him. So the most effective he has been this year with LA Galaxy is on crosses. So you want to deny crosses as much as possible. And you look at what LA did on the weekend. They played a 4-4-2 without a number 10, and I don't think it was all that effective. If they come out with that type of shape again, I think it really plays to Atlanta United's strengths, and I think they can handle it pretty well. But let's talk a little bit about Atlanta United. Mm-hmm. I think the 4-2-3-1 is going to come back. I think this is the week that it does come back because it makes a lot of sense from a matchup perspective. And I think they have the pieces to do it. Do we have the whiteboard handy?
Yeah, right
here.
Uh-huh. Okay. So we talked about it on the full-time report, I believe, just a possible lineup, and then I speculated with Doug on Southern Fried Soccer. So in a base 4-2-3-1, you're looking like this, just to refresh kind of how Atlanta will look. So it's the basic, you know, 4-2 holding, 3 attack, 1 here. So from what we know right now, on the left side, that's a question. We'll come back to it in a second. In the middle, I think it's Parkhurst and LGP. And then on the right side, that's another question. Come back to that one.
Yep.
Holding midfield, Jeff Lerenowitz, Darlington Nagby. I think Miguel Almiron as your 10. Joseph Martinez up top. And then we'll start building it around here. Okay. You notice one thing. I have Parkhurst on the left side of the two center backs. Generally, he's on the right. The reason I have that is in this 4-2-3-1 with Zlatan as, you know, a 6'5" forward, I'd like to get Chris McCann in the lineup. So in a 4-2-3-1, if you want to get Parkhurst and LGP in, you're going to play McCann as a left back. Okay. We're going to assume that Barco can start. If not, we'll talk about the options, but we assume he's on the left, and let's assume Tito Vichalba gets healthy enough to start on the right. So if that's the case, and this was the speculation we had over the weekend. If that's the case, you want to keep Julian Gressel on the field. So you want to play him at right back. Mm-hmm. Now, what you can do with this is it gets kind of lopsided in the way you attack. Because you don't necessarily want Chris McCann to attack as much because you want him back to deal with crosses. You don't want Ezequiel Barco to have to defend quite as much. You want him to be very free to attack. You do want Julian Gressel to get forward as much as you can. So what happens is you become kind of slanted. And teams will do this often, and I think it really suits what Atlanta United could do here. So you attack down the right side. When that happens, it turns into a different type of shape. It kind of becomes a little more like this, where... Yep. You have McCann, Parkhurst, LGP. You have Lerenowitz, who can kind of drop in here and help. You have Darlington Nagby, who can kind of slide out here and cover on the left. You have Julian Gressel, who can get forward and overlap. You have Miguel Almiron protecting here. And then you have Barco. You have Vichalba pushing up high, almost as a second forward. And you have Joseph Martinez. So what happens when you do this, you get your three center backs that we've seen a lot here lately, and these three have played together at three center backs. They did last week. You get Lerenowitz, who can protect in front. You get Nagby, who can slide out a little more to the left to fill that space where you'd normally have a left back. Gressel's got the whole wing because Tito will tuck in with Joseph, and then Almiron's free, Barco's free to create over here. So you have this attack where... going up against Ashley Cole for the Galaxy, who's going to be their left back, I like Julian Gressel and Tito Vichalba running Ashley Cole into the ground. I also like keeping Ashley Cole back defending so he's not whipping at crosses. Because let's talk a little bit about what the Galaxy will do, likely, at least based off what they did against Chicago. Because the Galaxy have created a problem for themselves by signing Zlatan. And you say, you sign Zlatan, why is that a problem? You don't have a way to get all of your best players on the field. So the Galaxy will play, I call it the empty bucket. It was a lot of what Bob Bradley did with the national team, where you don't really play with a number 10. You play with two holding, and generally they're playing with Perry Kitchen and Jonathan Dos Santos as your two. Kitchen will sit more, Dos Santos will fill into the space. Then they're playing with two wingers, and last week it was Roman Alessandrini and Sebastian Jaguet. And then up top it's Zlatan and Ola Kamara, because you want to get both of those guys on the field. Well, they're both staying up high. They kind of get in each other's way. It's hard to get chemistry with the two of them because they're both very similar. You get Alessandrini, Leggett kind of drifting inside. You get Dos Santos kind of drifting here. But you have a big empty space right here. So that's where Jeff Lorenowitz is going to defend. That means it's going to be a lot easier for him to help out with these two, especially on crosses. Mm-hmm. That also means Darlington Nagbe is going to be able to go, because he's not going to have as much work to do. So if the Galaxy play a 4-4-2 against Atlanta, I think the 4-2-3-1 makes a ton of sense. And I think that slanted kind of 4-2-3-1 with McCann in there, because McCann can still get forward and give you what a left back does. We've seen it.
Right.
But he doesn't have to go all the time. That'll free up Barco to be more creative. That'll let Gressel be on the other side very aggressive and going. And that'll keep Ashley Cole pinned in. So I think the 4-2-3-1... if the Galaxy play their 4-4-2 empty bucket, will be a great matchup for Atlanta.
Any final thoughts on that before we
what
finish?
Jason said.
Finish
the what there Jason said. That works.
I think that looks great, and I hope, due to the 4-2-3-1.
I would say this. Now, there are a couple big question marks. Is Vijalba going to play?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we can make that assumption yet.
Right.
Is Barco going to start? I don't think we can make that assumption. Now, Garza would obviously be in the mix.
Yep.
You know, if Vijalba and Barco both don't start, and you move Gressel to his more common, I won't say natural, but more common starting spot, then who's your right back?
Sal Zizo.
Would Wheeler Aminu be in this discussion?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That would just be something to keep an eye on, because we're making two big assumptions on health that I don't think we can really, put in ink yet.
Yeah, I think you can keep that shape. If you have different pieces, I would go Gressel at right wing. I'd go Zizo at right back. He can go forward if you feel more comfortable with Wheeler Aminu. I think he's fine too. He can get forward a good bit. On the left side, that's a bigger question. That's where I think Carlton might come more into play if you want to start him.
And Escobar is training.
Yeah.
So that is something
that's
we need to keep in mind.
Escobar could come into the mix. Yep. The other one is a guy like John Gallagher. Mm-hmm. Who, has been in an 18 or been on a trip. He scored 3 goals in USL. If you're worried about Barco Vijalba, if you're not going to have either one and you make the decision, I want Carlton to play 90 and then another probably 60 to 75 on Tuesday with the second team, and I want him to get with that group a little bit, bring up John Gallagher.
Yeah.
John Gallagher showed he's ready.
And I think we're out of time right now. I saw a bunch of y'all had score predictions, a lot of positive ones. We had 2-1, a couple draws, 3-1, 2-1. I think it's going to be around 2-1.
I'll have mine on Friday. I got to think about this one a little bit more.
And thanks again for stopping by for Stoppage Time. I'm Jimmy Vance with Jason Longstreet and Mike Conti. And before we sign off, just want to let you know that the 99 of the Game scarves are going to be going on sale either later today or tomorrow morning. So keep follow me on Twitter at ATLSoccer929 and follow the station at 929 The Game. And follow our website, and I'll be shooting out links in Facebook too. So you see it right there. Of course, we're on Tim, and it's got ATL on the back. So, and we got priority mail shipping. So just to be on the lookout for that link and tell your friends and family and all your supporters and stuff.
They aren't summer scars, by the way.
No.
They are not summer scars under these TV lights.
But thanks again, guys, for make sure we got Atlanta United 2, got John Nelson and myself on the call for that one. That's gonna be interesting. And
we'll be watching.
Yeah. And make sure you tune in tonight on the game at 10 o'clock for
for the Five Stripes countdown with the guys, and then they'll, you know, for match commentary, and then an hour post-match show. So long day for the guys on Saturday. But
Hashtag Five Stripes After Dark.
That's right. Make sure you tune in for all of our coverage. We'll be covering it, you know, like no one else. And again, Jimmy Vance, Jason Longshore, Mike Conti, thanks again for stopping by for Stoppage Time. We'll talk to you all next week.